Chapter 29. Oh, my friends, the downtrodden operatives of Coketown. Oh, my friends and fellow countrymen, the slaves of an iron-handed and a grinding despotism. Oh, my friends and fellow sufferers, and fellow workmen, and fellow men. I tell you, that the hour has come when we must rally round one another as one united power, and crumble into dusty oppressors that too long have battened upon the plunder of our families, upon the sweat of our brows, upon the labor of our hands, upon the strength of our sinews, upon the God-created glorious rights of humanity, and upon the holy and eternal privileges of brotherhood. Apostrophe, apostrophe, good. Apostrophe, apostrophe, here, here, here. Apostrophe, hurrah. And other cries arose in many voices from various parts of the densely crowded and suffocatingly close hall, in which the orator, perched on a stage, delivered himself of this, and what other froth and fume he had in him. He had declaimed himself into a violent heat, and was as hoarse as he was hot. By dint of roaring at the top of his voice under a flaring gaslight, clenching his fists, knitting his brows, setting his teeth, and pounding with his arms, he had taken so much out of himself by this time that he was brought to a stop and called for a glass of water. As he stood there, trying to quench his fiery face with his drink of water, the comparison between the orator and the crowd of attentive faces turned towards him was extremely to his disadvantage. Judging him by nature's evidence, he was above the mass in very little but the stage on which he stood. In many great respects he was essentially below them. He was not so honest, he was not so manly, he was not so good-humored. He substituted cunning for their simplicity, and passion for their safe solid sense. An ill-made, high-shouldered man, with lowering brows, and his features crushed into an habitually sour expression, he contrasted most unfavorably, even in his mongrel dress, with the great body of his hearers in their plain working clothes. Strange as it always is to consider any assembly in the act of submissively resigning itself to the dreariness of some complacent person, lord or commoner, whom three-fourths of it could, by no human means, raise out of the slough of inanity to their own intellectual level, it was particularly strange, and it was even particularly affecting, to see this crowd of earnest faces, whose honesty in the main no competent observer free from bias could doubt, so agitated by such a leader. Good. Here, here. Hurrah! The eagerness both of attention and intention, exhibited in all the countenances, made them a most impressive sight. There was no carelessness, no languor, no idle curiosity, none of the many shades of indifference, to be seen in all other assemblies, visible for one moment there. That every man felt his condition to be, somehow or other, worse than it might be, that every man considered it incumbent on him to join the rest, towards the making of it better, that every man felt his only hope to be in his allying himself to the comrades by whom he was surrounded, and that in this belief, right or wrong, unhappily wrong then, the whole of that crowd were gravely, deeply, faithfully in earnest, must have been as plain to anyone who chose to see what was there, as the bare beams of the roof and the whitened brick walls. Nor could any such spectator fail to know in his own breast that these men, through their very delusions, showed great qualities, susceptible of being turned to the happiest and best account, and that to pretend on the strength of sweeping axioms, howsoever cut and dried, that they went astray wholly without cause, and of their own irrational wills, was to pretend that there could be smoke without fire, death without birth, harvest without seed, anything or everything produced from nothing. The orator, having refreshed himself, wiped his corrugated forehead from left to right several times with his handkerchief folded into a pad, and concentrated all his revived forces in a sneer of great disdain and bitterness. But oh, my friends and brothers! Oh, men and Englishmen, the downtrodden operatives of Coketown! What shall we say of that man, that working man, that I should find it necessary so to libel the glorious name who, being practically and well acquainted with the grievances and wrongs of you, the injured pith and marrow of this land, and having heard you, with a noble and majestic unanimity, that will make tyrants tremble, resolve for to subscribe to the funds of the United Aggregate Tribunal, and to abide by the injunctions issued by that body for your benefit, whatever they may be. What, I ask you, will you say of that working man, since such I must acknowledge him to be, who, at such a time, deserts his post, and sells his flag, who, at such a time, turns a traitor and a craven and a recreant, who, at such a time, is not ashamed to make to you the dastardly and humiliating avowal, that he will hold himself aloof, and will not be one of those associated in the gallant stand for freedom and for right? The assembly was divided at this point. There were some groans and hisses, but the general sense of honor was much too strong for the condemnation of a man unheard. Be sure you're right, Slackbridge. Put him up. Let's hear him. Such things were said on many sides. Finally, one strong voice called out, is the man here? If the man's here, Slackbridge, let's hear the man himself, Steadoyo. Which was received with a round of applause. Slackbridge, the orator, looked about him with a withering smile, and, holding out his right hand at arm's length,
as the manner of all Slackbridges is,
to still the thundering sea, waited until there was a profound silence. Oh, my friends and fellow men! Said Slackbridge then, shaking his head with violent scorn, I do not wonder that you, the prostrate sons of labor, are incredulous of the existence of such a man. But he who sold his birthright for a mess of pottage existed, and Judas Iscariot existed, and Castlery existed, and this man exists. Here, a brief press and confusion near the stage, ended in the man himself standing at the orator's side before the concourse. He was pale, and a little moved in the face, his lips especially showed it, but he stood quiet, with his left hand at his chin, waiting to be heard. There was a chairman to regulate the proceedings, and this functionary now took the case into his own hands. My friends, said he, by virtue of my office as your president, I ask so our friend Slackbridge, who may be a little overheader in this business, to take his seat, whilst this man Stephen Blackpool is here. You all know this man Stephen Blackpool. You know him all and know his misfortunes, and his good name. With that, the chairman shook him frankly by the hand, and sat down again. Slackbridge likewise sat down, wiping his hot forehead always from left to right, and never the reverse way. My friends, Stephen began, in the midst of a dead calm, I ha had what's been spock know me, and 'tis likely that I shan't mend it. But I'd liefer you turn the truth concerning my son, fro my lips than fro any other man's, though I never couldn't speak afore so many, without being moitered and muddled. Slackbridge shook his head, as if he would shake it off, in his bitterness. I'm one single hand in Bounderby's mill, oa the men fear, as don't coom in yth proposed regulations. I can't coom in ym. My friends, I doubt they're doing yo any good. Liquor they'll do yo hurt. Slackbridge laughed, folded his arms, and frowned sarcastically. But he ain't so much for that as I stands out. If that were all, I'd coom in yth rest. But I ha my reasons mine, yo see, for being hindered. Not on now, but allus lifelong. Slackbridge jumped up and stood beside him, gnashing and tearing. Oh, my friends, what but this did I tell you? Oh, my fellow countrymen, what warning but this did I give you? And how shows this recreant conduct in a man on whom unequal laws are known to have fallen heavy? Oh, you Englishmen, I ask you, how does this supernation show in one of yourselves, who is thus consenting to his own undoing and to yours, and to your children's and your children's children's? There was some applause, and some crying of shame upon the man, but the greater part of the audience were quiet. They looked at Stephen's worn face, rendered more pathetic by the homely emotions it evinced, and, in the kindness of their nature, they were more sorry than indignant. "'Tis this delegate straight for tea speak, apostrophe," said Stephen, "and he's paid for tea, and he knows his work. Let him keep to tea. Let him give no heed to what I ha had to bear. That's not for him. That's not for nobody but me." Apostrophe, there was a propriety, not to say a dignity in these words, that made the hearers yet more quiet and attentive. The same strong voice called out, "Slackbridge, let the man be here, and out he tongue." Apostrophe, apostrophe, then the place was wonderfully still. "My brothers," apostrophe said Stephen, whose low voice was distinctly heard, "and my fellow workmen, for that you are to me, though not, as I knows on, to this delegate here I ha, but a word to send, and I could send no more, if I was to speak till strike o' day. I know weel, ah, what's afore me. I know weel that you are resolved to ha no more ado why a man who is not why you in this matter. I know weel that, if I was a Lynn Parish ith road, yo would feel it right to pass me by, as a foreigner and stranger. What I ha jetten, I'm unmack th best on." Apostrophe, Stephen Blackpool, apostrophe said the chairman, rising, "think on tea again. Think on tea once again, lad, afore thou'rt shunned by all out friends." Apostrophe, there was an universal murmur to the same effect, though no man articulated a word. Every eye was fixed on Stephen's face. To repent of his determination would be to take a load from all their minds. He looked around him, and knew that it was so. Not a grain of anger with them was in his heart. He knew them, far below their surface weaknesses and misconceptions, as no one but their fellow laborer could. "I ha thought on tea, above a bit, sir. I simply can't come in. I mun go th way as lays afore me. I mun tack my leave o' ah here." Apostrophe, he made a sort of reverence to them, by holding up his arms, and stood for the moment in that attitude, not speaking until they slowly dropped at his sides. "Money's the pleasant word as soon here as spoken why me. Money's the face I see here, as I first seen when I were young, and lighter here than now. I ha never had no fratch afore, sin ever I were born, why any o' my like. God knows I ha none now that's o' my makin'. Yo'll circa me traitor and that yo I mean t' say," apostrophe addressing Slackbridge, "but 'tis easier to circa than mak out. So let me." Apostrophe, he had moved away a pace or two, to come down from the platform, when he remembered something he had not said, and returned again. "Happily," apostrophe he said, turning his furrowed face slowly about, that he might as it were individually address the whole audience, those both near and distant, "happily, when this question has been taken up and discussed, there'll be a threat to turn out, if I'm let to work among yo. I hope I shall die ere ever such a time comes, and I shall work solitary among yo, unless it comes truly, I mun do tea, my friends, not to brave yo, but to live. I ha not but work to live by, and wherever can I go, I who ha worked sin I were no eighth at all, in Coketown here? I mak no complaints o bane turn to the wa, o bane outcassin and overlookin fro this time forward, but hope I shall be let to work. If there is any right for me at all, my friends, I think 'tis that." Apostrophe, not a word was spoken. Not a sound was audible in the building, but the slight rustle of men moving a little apart, all along the center of the room, to open a means of passing out, to the man with whom they had all bound themselves to renounce companionship. Looking at no one, and going his way with a lowly steadiness upon him that asserted nothing and sought nothing, old Stephen, with all his troubles on his head, left the scene. Then Slackbridge, who had kept his oratorical arm extended during the going out, as if he were repressing with infinite solicitude, and by a wonderful moral power the vehement passions of the multitude, applied himself to raising their spirits. Had not the Roman Brutus, oh, my British countrymen, condemned his son to death, and had not the Spartan mothers, O my soon-to-be victorious friends, driven their flying children on the points of their enemy swords? Then was it not the sacred duty of the men of Coketown, with forefathers before them, an admiring world in company with them, and a posterity to come after them, to hurl out traitors from the tents they had pitched in a sacred and a godlike cause? The winds of heaven answered yes, and bore yes, east, west, north, and south. And consequently three cheers for the United Aggregate Tribunal. Slackbridge acted as fugleman, and gave the time. The multitude of doubtful faces, a little conscience-stricken, brightened at the sound, and took it up. Private feeling must yield to the common cause. Hurrah! The roof yet vibrated with the cheering, when the assembly dispersed. Thus easily did Stephen Blackpool fall into the loneliest of lives, the life of solitude among a familiar crowd. The stranger in the land who looks into 10,000 faces for some answering look, and never finds it, is in cheering society as compared with him who passes 10 averted faces daily, that were once the countenances of friends. Such experience was to be Stephen's now, in every waking moment of his life. At his work, on his way to it and from it, at his door, at his window, everywhere. By general consent, they even avoided that side of the street on which he habitually walked, and left it, of all the working men, to him only. He had been for many years, a quiet silent man, associating but little with other men, and used to companionship with his own thoughts. He had never known before the strength of the want in his heart for the frequent recognition of a nod, a look, a word, or the immense amount of relief that had been poured into it by drops through such small means. It was even harder than he could have believed possible, to separate in his own conscience his abandonment by all his fellows from a baseless sense of shame and disgrace. The first 4 days of his endurance were days so long and heavy that he began to be appalled by the prospect before him. Not only did he see no Rachel all the time, but he avoided every chance of seeing her, for, although he knew that the prohibition did not yet formally extend to the women working in the factories, he found that some of them with whom he was acquainted were changed to him, and he feared to try others, and dreaded that Rachel might be even singled out from the rest, if she were seen in his company. So, he had been quite alone during the 4 days, and had spoken to no one, when, as he was leaving his work at night, a young man of a very light complexion accosted him in the street. "Your name's Blackpool, ain't it?" ," said the young man. Stephen colored to find himself with his hat in his hand, in his gratitude for being spoken to, or in the suddenness of it, or both. He made a feint of adjusting the lining, and said, "Yes. You are the hand they have sent to Coventry, I mean?" ," said Bitzer, the very light young man in question. Stephen answered yes, ," again. "I supposed so, from their all appearing, to keep away from you. Mr. Bounderby wants to speak to you. You know his house, don't?" Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.